Translation. Kamalakara Pipalai is said to have been the third Gopal. His behavior and love of Godhead were uncommon, and thus he is celebrated all over the world. Srila Prabhupada's purport. In the Gaura Ganudesh Deepika, verse 1-8, Kamalakara Pipalai is described as the third Gopala. His former name was Mahabala. The Jagannath deity at Mahesha in Sri Ramapura was installed by Kamalakara Pipalai. This village of Mahesha is situated about 2.5 miles from the Sri Ramapura railway station. The genealogy of the family of Kamalakara Pipalai is given as follows. Kamalakara Pipalai had a son named Chaturbhuj, who had two sons named Narayan and Jagannath. Narayan had one son named Jagannanda, and his son's name was Vijivaluchana. During the time of Vijivaluchana, there was a scarcity of finances for the worship of the Jagannath deity, and it is said that the Nawab of Dhaka, whose name was Shah Suja, donated 1,195 bighas of land in the Bengal year 1060. The land being the possession of Jagannath, the village was named Jagannath Pura. It is said that Kamalakara Pipalai left home, and therefore his younger brother Nipipati Pipalai searched for him and in due course of time found him in the village of Mahesha. Nitapali Pipalai tried to his best to bring his elder brother home, but he would not return. Under these circumstances, Nidipati Pipalai, with all his family members, came to Mahesha to reside. The members of this family still reside in the vicinity of the Mahesha village. Their family name is Adhikari, and they are a Brahmin family. The history of the Jagannath temple in Mahesha is as follows. One devotee of the name Dhruvananda went to see Lord Jagannath, Balaram, and Subhadra at the Jagannath Puri. When wanting to offer foodstuffs to Jagannath Ji that he had cooked with his own hands, this being his desire, one night Jagannath Ji appeared to him in a dream and asked him to go to Mahesha on the banks of the Ganges and there start worship of him in a temple. Thus, Dhruvananda went to Mahesha, where he saw the three deities, Jagannath, Balaram, and Subhadra, floating in the Ganges. He picked up all these deities and installed them in a small cottage. And with great satisfaction, he executed the worship of Lord Jagannath. When he became old, he was very much anxious to hand over the worship to the charge of someone reliable, and in a dream he got permission from Jagannath Prabhu to hand it over to a person whom he would meet the next morning. The next morning he met Kamalakara Pipalai, who was formerly an inhabitant of the village Kuli Juli in the Sundaravana forest area of Bengal and was a pure Vaishnava, a great devotee of Lord Jagannath. Thus, he immediately gave him charge of the worship. In this way, Kamalakara Pipalai became the worshipper of Lord Jagannath, and since then his family members have been designated as Adhikari, which means one who is empowered to worship the Lord. Thus, Adhikaris belong to a respectable Brahmana family. Five types of upper-class Brahmanas are recognized by the surname Pipalai. Om Agyatiminandasya Jinanjana Salakaya Chaksurumilitam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manopishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Gadambayam Dadati Svabhadantikam Vanchakalpajubhyushya Kripa Sindhu Bhayevacha Patitananam Bhavanevyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vasadi Gaura Bhaktarinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So what comes to mind in this particular verse, which I'd like to discuss this morning, is in relationship with dedicated, pure Vaishnava devotees. There's a difference between devotees and devotees. There are devotees and there are devotees. And the difference is to the degree which we are engaged in pure and motivated and unadulterated devotional service to Krishna's lotus feet. So obviously these personalities which we're discussing in this chapter, they are outstanding devotees, so much so that the Lord appears in their dreams and, gives them direction and instructions. And so they're worthy of our respect and worship, and to follow somehow in their footsteps, to ourselves come up to the higher levels of pure devotional service. This is the objective of all of us sitting here this morning, that we've got to rise above the free modes of material nature and be situated in transcendental goodness, pure devotional service. So I'd like to begin with a couple of stories which highlight in relationship with devotees and Krishna. It's a very sweet relationship, but until we come up onto that higher stage, we fall short of actually developing that loving relationship which Krishna is really waiting for. So the first story is called True Devotion. And let me begin by saying, once upon a time, there was a residence of a small village who were affected by famine. And because they were affected by famine, the villagers were going through a very difficult time. They were already very poor. They were very simple village, poor people. And on top of that, they then had to deal with this famine, which brought on starvation, and it brought on different kinds of diseases. And within that village, there was a temple, and then within the temple, there was an old priest. He was 70 years old. And he was very concerned with the situation within the village. There was an arrangement that the villagers would come 3 times a day and pray to the Lord, please relieve us from all this anxiety that we're going through. At least give us some rain so that we can grow our crops and be free from starvation. So they prayed and they prayed and they prayed and they prayed. It went on for months and months. But nothing changed. It remained the same. And the priest started getting very concerned. In fact, he was even questioning why the Lord hasn't reciprocated with his pure devotees. So he took it on himself. Well, I will personally try and invoke the Lord's mercy. So he prayed to Krishna. He was a great devotee of Krishna. So he prayed directly to Krishna. Do you not see the situation here? Your devotees are coming every day. They're praying at your lotus feet with great devotion and pleading to you, asking to relieve them of the difficulties that they're having in their life. So that night, this devotee had a dream, and Krishna appeared in the dream. And Krishna said to the priest, the devotee priest, actually, they are not my devotees. They are not my true devotees. So when the Jari woke up in the morning, he was confused because he was seeing firsthand that they were coming 3 times a day and praying and pleading and begging for the Lord's mercy. So so then what happened, let me try to remember. Oh, yeah, actually within the dream, Krishna said, well, because you are my pure devotee, I will fulfill your desire. I will make a change within the village. So the very next day, there was a change, and things got better and better and better, so to the point where actually the villagers were then given all the needs that they needed. And they were all very happy. Everyone was happy. However, after some time, the priest noticed that no one was coming any longer to the temple. That the Lord had fulfilled all their material needs. Why should I go to the temple anymore? So he tried to encourage them. Why are you not coming to the temple like you were coming before? Please come to the temple. But no one came. And then the priest understood, oh yes, the devotee understood, yes. Now they understand what Krishna was saying, that only when there is a need, then I will come and worship and pray to the Lord. When there's no material need, when I have everything at hand, I don't need to come. So this is an example, the difference between coming to the temple and asking, you know, treating Krishna as the gimme God. Gimme this, gimme that. So whether one is a Christian, whether one is a Muslim, a Hindu, or even us, sometimes us Hare Krishnas, we come before the Lord and ask for some material benediction. I mean, I know I still do. I can only speak for myself, but there we have it. It's not pure devotional service. So therefore, it's divided a little bit for me and a little bit for Krishna. Our service is divided like that. And Prabhupada gives the example of sand in the sweet rice, that sweet rice is generally very nice. You have had sweet rice? Anyone who has not had sweet rice? As we all know what sweet rice is. In fact, I was in one temple last winter, and a devotee in this particular temple, he gave me some prasad, some salty preps. And then after giving me the salty preps, when I had finished, he asked me if I wanted some sweet rice. So I declined. I said, no, it's okay, I won't take any sweet rice. And he said, well, you should take some sweet rice. I said, no, it's okay. I'm perfectly satisfied with the prasad that you've already given me. And he said, you must take some sweet rice. This sweet rice is very well-known sweet rice. It's famous all over the district, wherever it was. I can't remember it was. I think it was Vishakhapatnam or somewhere like that. So I declined again. I said, no, I don't want any sweet rice. And then he's got a little upset with me. He said, you must take this sweet rice. And so I said, okay, bring me one bowl. And he brought me one bowl of sweet rice. And I tasted it. And it was absolutely wonderful, as he said. And after finishing that bowl, I said, can you give me another bowl? And he brought another bowl of sweet rice. And after that bowl, I dared ask for another. But he was happy to serve. He said, yes, here is your third bowl of sweet rice. And as I was taking that third bowl of sweet rice, you know, I was just thinking, this must be like pure devotional service. A pure devotional service, you just want more and more and more and more. And you will not stop. It's just, you know, so addictive. And you'll be so absorbed that nothing in this world matters anymore. Just like when I was taking that third bowl of sweet rice, nothing mattered, and nothing around me mattered. I was taking that, you know, third bowl of sweet rice, which was Amrita. It was pure nectar. So this is the example that Prabhupada gives, that although sweet rice is very nice, it's one of our most favorite preparations. But if the cook, for instance, puts salt instead of sugar, which sometimes happens, you will not relish the sweet rice anymore. Or even, as Prabhupada was giving the example, a little bit of sand. It doesn't have to be very much, just even a little bit of sand in the sweet rice, and the whole sweet rice is ruined. So the other story is called Loving Reciprocation. And it's about a rich man. He was a very, very wealthy, rich man who got bored with so many people claiming to be his friend, but in actual fact they were coming to him with the intention of getting some of his money. This is one of the problems wealthy people have. When people know that you have some money, they will rub shoulders with you, but not for the purpose of becoming your friend necessarily, but mostly because they want some of your money. You've got what I need, so I'm rubbing shoulders with you. Please give me some of your money. So he was aware of this, and he started getting quite frustrated. He had no friends. All his so-called friendship was based on, you know, you got something that I want, so I want to be your friend. So he decided to do something about it. One day, he went to live in another town. He joined a club, and he started making friends with people within that club. They didn't know who he was. They didn't know he had changed his name. He had changed his whole identity. And no one in the club knew who he was. And he was suddenly experiencing this difference in his life, that he was developing these really sound relationships that he had not experienced before. You know, he would joke with people and they would joke back. He would bully people, they would bully him back. You know how friendships are, they're kind of they're up and down, and sometimes there's some one wants to be better than the other, and other times the other wants to be better than that other. It's a little bit like Krishna. Sometimes Krishna, he's on the shoulder of one of the cowherd boys, but on another time, one of the cowherd boys are on his shoulder. So it's a relationship. It's a mutual relationship. There was that soul song back in the 70s, which they still play today, as far as I understand. It's called I forget what it's called. Well, that's probably good, I don't remember. It's something about, anyway, the gist of the song is that love doesn't come easy, and it requires the attention of both. It's not a one-way system. It's a relationship, and in order to develop pure love, it takes quite some time, and you know each side has to give and take. So I think that was the words that was used, that you must give and you must take. Sometimes you can give a hard time to your friend, but you'll have to expect that at intervals your friend will give you a hard time too. So this is loving reciprocation. To build that kind of relationship, and each one has to be prepared for the other, whatever the mood. So this man, he started to experience relationships, and his whole life changed for the better. He became so much more inspired within his life. But if you take it from another angle, that Krishna himself, you know, he's a person. He's not only a person, he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And he's wanting to develop relationships with his devotees. And therefore, when we come before him with so many gimme, 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 gimmes, then he's not very satisfied with that kind of reciprocation. And he's waiting for us to come to the point where we're saying, you know, I don't want anything from you except pure devotional service, so that I can serve your lotus feet with rapt attention and undivided service. You know? And yeah, like that. So Krishna takes pleasure in his pure devotees developing these different kinds of relationships. And in the Bhagavad Gita, for instance, there's one verse, Bhagavad Gita 1:22, 20, 21, 22. Arjuna said, "O infallible one, please take my chariot between the two armies so that I may see those persons here who desire to fight and with whom I must contend in this great trial of arms." And then Srila Prabhupada's purport, he writes, "The relationship between Krishna and his servant is very sweet and transcendental. The servitor is always ready to render service to the Lord. And similarly, the Lord is always seeking an opportunity to render some service to his devotee. He takes great pleasure in his pure devotee assuming the position of ordering him. Thus, his pure devotee assumes the position of ordering him. Then he does in being the giver of orders." So this was the scene on the battlefield where Krishna became the charioteer of Arjuna. And a charioteer's position is servitorship completely. You take the order of the one who's on your chariot fighting, in this case Arjuna. So he began by asking Krishna, "Please take my chariot between these two armies to see who we have to fight." So it was an order, and Krishna immediately took up the reins and fulfilled the order of Arjuna. Sometimes, you know, devotees are put in a position where they're even more powerful than Krishna. And just like Mother Yasoda, how fortunate is Mother Yasoda, who's holding Ananta Koti Brahmanya, that Lord who's Lord Ananta holding up all the universes, and she's holding him on her lap. So this is an example of, you know, Ananta, he's so powerful and strong and can take any amount of weight, but here's Mother Yasoda taking Krishna on his lap, on her lap, and holding him. So this is an example of how Krishna gives the power to his devotee to even carry him around. There are many examples like this where we find how Krishna allows his devotee to take the supreme position. There's another one where, Yudhisthira wanted to get instructions from Krishna about how to lead leadership. And then Krishna said, "Well, look, I would like you to go to Bhishma Dev, who's on the bed of arrows on the battlefield, which we just left. He's still there, he's still alive. I want you to go to him and ask these instructions from him." And he said, "Let's go, we'll go right away and speak to Bhishma Dev." And when Bhishma Dev was asked by Krishna, "Can you give Yudhisthira some instructions?" And Bhishma Dev said, "Well, how can I possibly do that when you're present? And not only that, I got hundreds of arrows in my back, they're going right through me. I've lost all composure. I'm weak. I'm thirsty. I'm clouded by I have no capacity whatsoever to instruct you to steer. So in this way, he declined. But then Krishna said no. He said, I will return tomorrow. By that time, you'll be ready to give instructions. And within those 24 hours, Bhishmadev suddenly gained all strength, all intelligence, and all capacity to be able to, on those bed of arrows, instruct Yudhisthira in the leadership. So sometimes we ourselves get a little bit of glimpse of how Krishna reciprocates with us within our attempt to serve his lotus feet. Of course, a lot of these times Krishna reciprocates with us to encourage us, not that we're necessarily pure in any way. I will give a few examples of my own, a few reciprocations that I've had. But, you know, first I want to say it was not because I'm a pure devotee, or I was at that time particularly enlightened or having a close relationship with Krishna. But mostly it was out of frustration. And Krishna, just to encourage me, he reciprocated with me. Do you mind if I tell those? Huh?
Yeah.
Is that okay? Okay. Well, this was in Sweden. I joined in Berry Place in 1972, and in 1974. Somewhere around that time, the local sannyasi, who at that time was Rabbatinandan Swami, he asked me to go to Sweden. That, you know, they only had a few devotees there, two grihastha couples and one brahmachari. And they also wanted Bhumadev to come here, because I think he was over there, so the idea is that we would swap over. So when I arrived in Sweden, I had quite a shock, because, you know, the whole situation there is a little bit different than England. In winter, it's sometimes 20 below zero. You're out on the street distributing books, a language you don't know, people who don't speak English. Hot dog stands just down the road, and the smell, you know, whizzing past you. So suddenly I was in that situation. I can remember sometimes saying, "Dear Ashanta, are you nuts? Are you crazy?" But for some reason I carried on. I pushed and pushed. And actually that laid a wonderful foundation in my whole spiritual life. That if you want to come up to higher levels in your spiritual life, do something heroic. There's a saying, there's no victory without defeat. So you've got to defeat something in order to be victorious. So I had to defeat over my laziness, my British laziness and my British pride and whatever else. And that was the place I did it. But anyway, one day, every Sunday I used to cook for the deities, Gornitai Prishpan rice. It was my favorite preparation, Prishpan rice. And there's nice recipes in Yamuna Devi's cookbook. And Rabbatananda Maharaj, he also used to cook Prishpan rice for the Sunday feast in London. So I learned how to do it. And Prishpan rice, if you know Prishpan rice, there's absolutely every spice you can imagine in there.
There's nuts, cashew nuts, there's raisins, there's cheese balls, there's coconut wedges, and a little bit of salt, a little bit of sugar, saffron. Prabhupada called it a feast in itself. It's so wonderful. So I was attached to doing Pushpan rice every Sunday, but one Sunday, the day before, I got all the ingredients, but one Sunday morning I realized I forgot the coconut. And I was quite disturbed by that. I forgot the coconut. What's Pushpan rice without coconut wedges? I was thinking. I was very frustrated. But then I decided, well, I'll carry on anyway, preparing it. And as I was in the kitchen preparing it, there was one of the Sunday guests came a little earlier, rang the bell. I opened the door. There was no one else in the temple at the time. And this guest arrived and said, Hare Krishna. I've come for the Sunday feast. I come for the Sunday program. So I let him in, and he was an Indian gentleman. And as he took his coat off, he said, oh, by the way, I've got something for the Lord. It was a coconut. Wow. Howdy bowl. So that was probably one of the first reciprocations I had. The second one was in Jagannath Puri, because in those early days, the pujaris of the temple, they were aware of the fact that we had become Vaishnavas, but we were Westerners, and we were ex-hippies. So in those days, the Indians used to intimidate us a lot. You know, who do you think you are? You're ex-hippies trying to be Vaishnavas? Especially the Goswamis, they were really heavy. And most of these pujaris are Goswamis in the temple. So I was aware of the fact that I couldn't go in, and I accepted that. But I was also aware of the fact that we could actually ask for prasadam from the temple. And the policy was that you would give the pujari some money, he would then go into the temple, get some prasadam, and bring it out for you. So I did that. I gave, I think it was 100 rupees or something. And I asked this pujari, please, can you get me some prasadam? So he went into the temple. And I waited and I waited and I waited and I waited and I waited. No pujari. Then suddenly he came out. And he handed me this box of Jagannath Prasad. And then he said, that'll be another 200 rupees. And I said, no. I asked for 100 rupees worth. And I gave you the money, and be happy with that. So he snatched it back from me. And then I snatched it back from him. I waited so long. He was taking the prasad. And then he snatched it again back from me. And I was just about to, really go for it, when someone from behind hit me in the ear, quite hard. And I took advantage of this, because I was already half falling over. I decided, to completely fall over, lay down on the ground, completely unconscious. Although I wasn't unconscious, I just pretended, because I knew what would happen. And I knew the consequences of anyone, any Indian hitting a foreigner. It's a no-no area. So I was there and immediately this big crowd came around me. And I was, there was absolute chaos, And then the police came. And then as soon as the police came, I woke up from my unconscious state. And I tried to stagger on my two feet. And then the policeman would say, "What's happening here?" And then all the Indian men who had seen what happened, they explained. So the policeman said, "Okay, I want you to come down to the station and write out an official complaint. I would take this Pujari with me." So we both went down to the police station, and after explaining what happened, and the policeman said, "Do you want to press charges?" And by that time, the brother of this Pujari had come running to the police station, and he started to plead to me, "Don't press charges, because if you do, my brother he'll get, sacked from his position in the temple." So he was like literally down there on the floor begging me. So I said, "Okay, well, let's make an agreement then. We'll do a little negotiation here. I won't press charges on one condition, only one." He said, "Yes, whatever. Let me know whatever it is that you want." I said, "Can you please get me some Jagannath prasadam?" He ran down to the temple. He was back within 10 minutes with a whole pile of Jagannath prasad. And I accepted it, and that's how we resolved everything. So there's, again, it's a reciprocation with the Lord. That, showing the pujaris in the temple, don't be so mean. Don't be so miserly. This is my prasadam, and it's for everyone. And then once I got frustrated with my going to Thais, and threatened them. I don't know how I did it, but I did it. And I was living in a rented apartment in Plymouth, but the owners were coming back within 3 months. I had 3 months to find a new apartment, my wife and son. We were renting a house, and so we wanted to get another house. And I was looking and looking and looking. I was thinking of getting something more rural, so that I can engage the devotees in some service as they were getting trained up on the land like that. So I was looking for a rural property, and after 3 months, I had no luck at all. And I had 3 days left before I had to move from that house. So I came before my Gornit Thai and I said, "Look, I've tried my best, now it's your turn. And if you don't find a place within the next 3 days, you don't get any more chapatis." And when I said that, well, what am I saying? But funny enough, that afternoon I rang the usual phone at the estate agencies, as I was ringing before. And then when one estate agency, the lady answered the phone, I said, "Can I speak to such and such," which I usually speak to. She said, "Oh, they're all gone home. All the workers here have gone home. It's Friday afternoon. They've gone home early." She said, "Can I help you?" I said, "Well, who are you?" She said, "Well, I'm the cleaning lady." I said, "Well, how can you possibly help me?" She said, well, try me. I said, no, it's okay. So I was going to put the phone down. But she said, no, no, please, let me help you. So she was insisting. So I said, well, look, I'm looking for this kind of place, a rural place, blah, 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 blah. And then suddenly she said, write this number down. I know this agency. So I wrote the number down, and I phoned the agency. It was actually a little bit over the border from Devon to Cornwall, which I had never tried. I wasn't thinking of going any further than back to Vedanta Manor. But it ended up that I crossed the border to Cornwall. This agency was in Cornwall, and they had free properties, which I was looking for. That's the kind of thing I was looking for. The lady said, look, I'm not supposed to do this, but this weekend, if you want, you can go and see these properties and let me know on Monday morning. So I went to see them. The first one was great, the second one was even better, and the third one was exactly what I was looking for. Monday morning, I contacted the estate agents, signed the agreement papers, and Tuesday I moved in. And I can only say my only... Yeah. I don't know whether I should say it or no, but I came to the conclusion that Krishna liked me chastising him and threatening him. Though I have not done it since again. But there you go. Out of frustration, we sometimes, you know, like to intensely, you know, chastise or come before the Lord because our intention is with the idea of serving with pure devotion. It's because our intention is right, then the Lord reciprocates with us. So I'm sure you have your own stories to tell. And from these stories, they give us great incentive to go that little further within our devotion to Krishna. Is that? Sorry, I didn't...
You threatened grandparents, they won't take the party. I'm asking, did you make them party?
Oh yeah, when we moved in, then the Lord got what he needed. Yeah, of course. Yeah. So thank you very much. I'm going to finish there. Please, on a final note, please try to develop this kind of reciprocal relationship with the Lord, and you will see what generally appears to be very, very difficult to do, even sometimes the simplest thing. If we develop that kind of loving reciprocation with Krishna, he will enter within our service in such a way that everything will then start to become effortless. We won't even have to think how to do it. It'll automatically be done by Krishna. Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita class ki. Srila Prabhupada ki. Itai Gora Prema Nandi.